This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Donald Trump's election left many progressives really worried. Here was a man who had threatened to jail his opponent, and now he's president-elect. Were we heading toward a dictatorship? A week after the election, a writer named Sarah Kendzior suggested that concerned citizens keep lists as a way to cope, lists of facts and beliefs and principles. That same month, Amy Siskind, who is the director of a nonprofit, took that advice to heart. She began keeping lists of things that were changing. Here's her heading, quote, "Experts in authoritarianism advise to keep a list of things subtly changing around you so you'll remember," unquote. That list went viral, and she's been writing an entry every week since then. Now, the first year of that list has been published as a book, and she's with us to talk about it. We'll get to that conversation in just a moment.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Harper Perennial, publisher of Anthony Horowitz's Magpie Murders, a whodunit woven into a modern-day murder mystery. The reader must put together the pieces of the puzzle to solve not one, but two crimes. Now available in paperback.
I'm Linda Holmes. There's more stuff to watch these days than you can ever get to. That's why we make Pop Culture Happy Hour. Twice a week, we give you the lowdown on what's worth your time and what's not. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us now in studio is Amy Siskind, the author of The List, a week-by-week reckoning of Trump's first year. Amy, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
How did this list, this book, come about? Was it as a result of Sarah Kendzior's admonition, or was there something else?
Well, just as buildup and just in terms of where we are now, this morning, Trump referred to our former president as cheating Obama.
And cheating Obama?
In a tweet. So, and, you know, it's Tuesday. There'll be 10 other things he'll do today that in normal times would be, you know, front page news for weeks. That's what we've come to accept. And you didn't even notice because he's doing so much other crazy stuff in a given day.
Well, and I've also kind of stopped following the president's Twitter feed on a daily basis because I got to live.
Yes. So when I decided to do the list, it was shortly after the election following Trump. He didn't seem to have normal policies or visions the way a traditional Republican or Democrat would have. Instead, he seemed to be feeding on impulses that were more authoritarian-like. In other words, going after the free media, going after, quote-unquote, the others, trying to spark hatred of others. And in the first week he took office, the Southern Poverty Law Center recorded a record number of hate crimes. And Trump that week, instead of condemning it, said we should ask for understanding of others, which was a theme that has continued throughout. So those were the kind of things I noticed the first week. And I started reading up on authoritarianism and what it would feel like. And the experts have warned very clearly that something like this would happen. And Sarah uniquely had recommended, like, where you are sitting today, you have to start to write this stuff down because you'll be like the frog in water coming to boil degree by degree, and you won't notice.
So, until the water's too hot and it's too late.
Yes, and the water is coming close to boiling. And that day, as I was reading articles and he was attacking the cast of Hamilton on Twitter in that particular day, Eleanor Roosevelt has always been my North Star, and I traveled up to her home for some guidance as to what I could do as a concerned citizen, and left that day after thinking through it, reading about her views on we the people are our own government, our own democracy, and came home that night and started the list, which in the first week was just 9 items that I noticed were not normal.
Amy, who's your target audience for this? Like, what do you hope to accomplish, and with whom do you hope to accomplish it?
The target audience is everyone. This is supposed to be a first draft of history of what's going on during the Trump era, because I think this is a unique time for our country. I don't think we've ever had somebody come in and try to deconstruct our democracy. And I think the list is not anything traditional Republican versus Democrat, which in the first few weeks really confused people. I don't look at, for example, philosophical differences, because that's normal. I won't look at the tax break or the repeal of Obamacare and the traditional things, but I might look at why people with disabilities are handcuffed outside McConnell's office, dragged out of their wheelchair for protesting and dragged out of the office. That is not normal. So those are the kind of things I've been tracking. And the list has, as he took office and started to staff up his regime, gotten longer and longer.
There are a number of items on the list every week. Routinely, from week to week, it often has 100 items. Some of them stand out more than others, like the president's comments on the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia last year, which take up most of your list from week 40. Just to refresh your memory, here is some of what the president said after the violence in Charlottesville.
Yes, I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
That was President Trump speaking in a Tuesday news conference the weekend after the violence in Charlottesville. Amy, what are some of the other top defining moments of his presidency so far that you think have really turned out to be consequential on your list?
And the interesting thing, as you point that out, that was in the first week's list when he asked for tolerance. So what I've noticed about him is he's been consistent. He's the same person he was when he started. And he has two objectives that he's been pursuing since he won the election. One is to enrich himself, and the other is to stay in power. And if you look through those lenses at his actions, they start to make sense. Because again, he doesn't have any traditional policies. He doesn't have any sort of vision. You know, his policy is sort of scattered day in, day out. We can talk about different periods of time. And what I generally notice week by week as the lists have gotten longer is our media's job is to focus on what he is doing day by day. And so on a given week, somewhere between 50 to 80% of the stories on the list are getting very little coverage, maybe single source coverage, local coverage, or no coverage beyond the market that they're in. And a lot of those stories have to do with what's happening to our marginalized communities, what's happening to women, what's happening to our environment. As he's sort of staffed up his regime, there's many hands at play now that are taking away rights, that are making information disappear. Yesterday, breast cancer was taken off the website. There's a lot of stuff about our environment that's been taken away. LGBTQ community has been taken out of the census. So there are certain themes about him making things invisible, information and people invisible, which then, if they don't exist, you don't need to give them rights and protections.
I wonder, though, if part of the challenge, particularly as it relates to journalism, and I'm not trying to be an apologist for the media because I have plenty of critiques with the way that we cover the Trump presidency and have since before this program launched. But I think one of the challenges is figuring out what to focus on. I mean, yes. I was always taught that news is not in the reporting. News is in the editing. It's in figuring out what to say, what not to say, and how to say it in what order. I wonder if that's part of maybe the luxury of this list that's different from what we have to do as journalists, which is figure out, you know, what do we lead with at the very beginning when we say, from NPR News is All Things Considered, and what's the first thing that comes out of our mouths? With a list, you can just kind of keep track of everything.
Right, and that's the service it provides. And I know a lot of people in the media secretly tell me they read it because they've missed so much. And I'm not meaning to criticize the media. I think there's been a big improvement from the start when he first took office, and there was a lot of normalization. You know, today Trump became president because he, you know, read off a teleprompter. There's been a lot of improvement, and I totally get the plight that your job is to cover the news stories as they break. So the service I'm providing is the rest of the stories that aren't getting the coverage, that are the slow deconstruction of our democracy, but as well as our values. And I think that is what's driven this uprising, which is called the resistance, even though it doesn't seem to get covered as the resistance. I think it's people who are not necessarily politically aligned. I have a lot of personal friends who have never been politically involved who are very upset by what's happening to the fabric of our country. So that's why it's more broad-based.
One listener. Well, here's a perspective from one listener who left a note in our inbox.
Yes, my name is Tony from Plantation, Florida. I think we've been in normal mode for a long, long time, and what he's doing is reestablishing it and creating a new normal. I'm not a fan of bullying. I'm not a fan of his abrupt style, but I think if we're going to make some changes, it has to be kind of straightforward. non-politically correct and face the issues as they are.
Tony, thanks very much for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. I wonder about that, Amy. I mean, this idea of normal is a challenging concept. Gretchen wrote on our Facebook page, normal is not worth defending if there's a better way to do something, or if a change would make the world a better, more humane, more just place. Normal has been the unnecessary killing of black men, sometimes unarmed, by policemen and unaddressed societal racism. Normal has been women sexually harassed. Normal has been almost half of the voting age population not voting. Why is normal worth defending?
Well, I guess it's how you qualify that word, and I take all of Gretchen's points, and those are things that unfortunately have only escalated and gotten worse under Trump. What I am trying to cover in the book are things that are a decay of our democracy, because we were sort of ripe for a populist type figure to uprise. I think it was well cast out by the Mercers and Bannon. If you read the coverage now of what happened with Cambridge Analytica, that they in 2014 cast out the words deep state and whether an authoritarian strongman could come in and take over. And they started out with Cruz. That didn't work out. So they brought in Trump. So I think we were trying to cast something that would fit the time. So our country was ripe for the picking as far as that went. My concern is, and when you read the book week by week, that our democracy, that you learned about in history class in high school, was really more based on norms than laws. There's nothing now that is putting Trump in check. He's just coming out unilaterally with policies. Our State Department is almost completely defunct. 8 out of the top 10 posts are unstaffed. And one of the two that is staffed with a Fox and Friends co-host. So when we're talking about him meeting with Russia, with Putin in the White House, there's nobody that can have a dialogue with him, nor will he be open to listening to anybody around him. He doesn't have a press secretary. He might not have a chief of staff shortly. A third of the key roles in our executive branch are unfilled. Half of the people that have worked for him have been fired. So increasingly, we have a single person in charge of our government, and the legislative branch is not checking him.
Well, I do get you on that, particularly about the structure of the government, the positions that have gone unfilled. I just kind of wonder, as we talk about normalcy, you know, America is a nation that has blown up norms plenty of times before. I mean, no one would have thought that a B-list movie actor would become our president, but Ronald Reagan served 2 terms. No one thought that a black man, let alone a biracial black man, would ever be America's head of state. And yet that was Donald Trump's predecessor. We destroy norms in this country all the time, and many Americans would argue we're better for it. Who's to say which norms are the right ones?
Well, though they were both traditional, well, in the case of Reagan, a traditional Republican, in the case of Barack Obama, traditional Democrat.
But he was black. He was a black president of a nation whose, you know, the union that formed his life was illegal just before he was born.
Right. But what I'm trying to capture in the book are things that are attacks on our democracy. So Obama was not an attack on our democracy. He, you know, again, you might not agree with Ronald Reagan's policies. He was a traditional Republican. Obama's a traditional Democrat. They had structure around them. They had functioning governments. If Obama was going to launch a vision for a health care plan or to clean up the environment, there would be, you know, a trajectory of how that would work and normally function. He wouldn't wake up and tweet about it and call, you know, the president before him a cheating president. So, you know, I get the argument that it's outside the box, but it's also outside the box in terms of ending our democracy, which is what you need to start to be concerned about. That quietly, what we're not covering is things like the ICE roundups. And ICE, to me, is very similar. I'm a student of the Holocaust and a Jewish American. The uprise of Hitler and Gestapo. ICE, and these are stories that are getting very little media coverage, but get a lot of coverage in my book and my lists, have started to round up people at Motel 6s, at 7-Elevens. They're picking up people that have been in our country 39 out of the 40 years of their life when they pick up their kids at school. the number of refugees being allowed into our country was supposed to be 110,000 this year under Obama. Trump cut it down to 45,000 and has let in 10,000. So the fabric of our country is changing dramatically to become white. And you might argue there was a base that voted for that. But it's worth noting that these things are not traditionally American.
I should also clarify. I think you said that the president doesn't have a press secretary. I think you meant a communications director.
Oh, communications director. Right.
I figured that was what you meant. Thank you.
I
should also note that a number of the stories that you are mentioning are getting coverage. It kind of depends on where you look. KQED in San Francisco has covered some of the ICE raids in the San Francisco Bay Area. The Fronteras desk based at KJZZ in Arizona has been covering a number of the issues on the border. Just this morning, Morning Edition had a conversation with Kerry Khan about the president's tweet regarding these caravans that are apparently bringing Central Americans through Mexico.
Same theme.
Right, same theme. So there are various forms of this reporting, but I do take your point that it's more sporadic.
It's overwhelming. Just like Sinclair Broadcasting is in my book in six different places, and what he's been doing to the media to kind of shutter media or make it into propaganda type media, that's well covered in the book. And once in a while, we'll get these moments like we did this week with Sinclair, and everybody in the media is hoarding towards Sinclair. That's been going on for a year. You know, the idea of Boris Epstein coming on nine times a week. This is not new news. It's just in the chaos we lose these stories.
Let me get to a few of your comments before we have to pause. Dan is listening in Arlington. Dan writes, it's hard to choose what makes Trump so not normal. There are so many things, but perhaps one of the most disturbing, blatant things he does is respond via Twitter to what he watches on Fox News. We'll continue our conversation with Amy Siskin, the author of The List, and get to more of your questions and comments in just a moment.
We'd like to thank our sponsor who brings you this message, Discover Card, who alerts you if they find your Social Security number on any one of thousands of risky websites. Discover believes there are some things that you just need to know. It's just another way Discover looks out for you, not just your account. And best of all, Social Security alerts are free for Discover Card members. All you have to do is sign up online. Learn more at discover.com/freealerts. Limitations apply.
NPR's Code Switch tackles race and identity in America with humanity and humor. You'll laugh, you'll learn, you'll get uncomfortable. It's worth it. Find Code Switch on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I wonder, Amy, about the tone with which we must discuss the oddities, unusual qualities, idiosyncrasies, abnormalities of the Trump administration. There's no question that this is a very unique presidency, factually. But I wonder what the right way is to discuss it. I mean, comparing ICE to the Gestapo feels a little extreme, and I wonder if the tone maybe makes it difficult to engage in conversation with Americans in general. Marie, who just sent us an email, emailed us again and wrote, "You can't compare Nazis with ICE. They are not rounding up legal residents. These people are illegal. Some are criminals. Please stop churning the lies." How do we pick a tone to have this conversation with?
Well, if you study the uprise of Hitler, it didn't happen overnight, nor with any authoritarian regime. And the pace at which Trump has taken these things on is as alarming historically, retrospectively, as the uprise of Hitler. So the people that are being rounded up, targeted, you're starting to see, for example, in San Francisco, the spokesperson for ICE resigning because of the lies he was being forced to tell. Even if they, again, I go back to the frog in boiling water. Is it shocking to say that? Perhaps. Is there a comparison to the way things ramped up in Hitler's Germany? Anybody who's read history would say absolutely yes. And, you know, the way any of these, you know, authoritarian regimes start off, they target one group first. And that's why I'm always pointing out, watch how he's treating one marginalized community, be it Muslim Americans, being the way he attacks Black Americans with the NFL anthem, be it women with taking down information about breast cancer or having so few women in his administration. These are things that, you know, in and of themselves don't seem alarming. It's the aggregation of them.
It sounds like you're making the argument that Martin Niemöller made with that famous quote, first they came for the socialists, I didn't speak out because I wasn't a socialist, then the trade unionists, then the Jews, then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me.
Yeah. Is anybody surprised at DACA? You know, that he repealed DACA for the first time and then repealed it again on Easter. You know, it's part of a broader pattern of making America white. And I think the comparison is apt. It's not being very well reported. It's happening in very cruel ways. They're having immigrants who come in that are meeting at checkpoints separated. And the ACLU is fighting this, parents from their children, to make an example to try to discourage immigrants. So it's sort of broad-based, but it's very inhumane in its nature.
Well, I guess part of what I'm getting at is, you know, your book is, it's, and I'm looking at it now, it looks like the book is about, let's see, it's 400, and it's like 400 pages of actual content.
100 pages of triple space.
Like 100 in an index. This thing is reported. Like, this is very thoroughly sourced. But if I was a Trump voter and I see this book, I don't like being told that I have elected the next Hitler. I don't appreciate you telling me that I voted for someone who is a threat to a democracy that I love, that I may have signed up to serve as a service member, that I may have worked very hard to be a good civic member of. I don't appreciate you telling me that I've elected the next Hitler. Like, who are you to tell me that I've elected an authoritarian?
Somebody here, a sentinel, is I think what somebody called me in one of the book reviews. What I tried to do is lay out the facts, and people are telling me on my Twitter feed that they're sending it to their family that are Trump supporters and whatnot.
But if I'm a Trump supporter,
I can't make people crack it open and read if you're asking.
I guess what I'm asking is, if I am a Trump supporter, even if your facts are 100% solid,
right,
the realization is too insulting and too painful. And not only do I not want to listen to you, I don't want to hear those facts anymore.
Right.
Aren't you digging me deeper into a hole by just telling me all these things in such a direct kind of, in a deluge?
Yeah. So I'm not with the book hoping to preach. I'm just hoping to lay out the facts. And very purposefully, the way I've done it week by week, people will be really irritated. Like, why is this just so cut and dry? You know, I can see on Twitter that you believe this happened for a reason. I don't do that in the book. I just lay out the facts.
Let me get to a few more of your comments for Amy Siskin, the author of The List. Thomas emailed, Donald Trump is not eroding our democracy because we do not live in a democracy. We live in a representational republic, which is exactly how someone can lose the popular vote and still win the election. There is no need to intellectualize a person with the nuance of a sledgehammer. We elected an arrogant New Yorker as president, and he is leading like an arrogant New Yorker. And Marie emailed, honestly, our independence and democracy was being eroded for years. Obama had, I believe, over 80 executive orders. How is that democratic? Sounds like we had a king to me. Worth noting, Amy, that you had some very strong critiques of Barack Obama. You were a strong Hillary Clinton supporter. I believe back in 08, you said that you would rather support John McCain than Barack Obama at the time. How much of this do you think is part of a trend that predates Donald Trump, or have your views on Barack Obama shifted?
Well, again, Barack Obama was doing things that were traditionally Democratic, okay? And McCain, Reagan, who else we're going to talk to, would do things that were traditionally Republican. Trump doesn't fall into either of those categories. What he's doing now is just sort of, you know, somebody, one of his friends from New York called and said, my real estate properties aren't doing well, so let's attack Bezos this week. I'm attacking China this week for tariffs. I'm putting tariffs on steel and aluminum. There's no rhyme or reason to this policy. They don't, you know, if using Barack Obama, if Barack Obama was sitting in the same seat and was attacking a corporation, driving down their stock 11% in 4 days, every Republican in Washington, D.C. would be up at a mic yelling bloody murder. So again, what I'm trying to focus on in the book is what is not normal. And this is not the first time that he attacked, for example, a Bezos. If you go back in the early weeks of the list, he attacked Boeing and drove their stock price down. It got to a point in the early weeks of his administration where he attacked corporations so much that Wall Street people were actually shorting stocks, trying to anticipate who he would attack next. So where I'm trying to drive the conversation is stuff that's not normal.
We got a number of voicemails from you saying where you are noting these changes showing up where you live. Here's one note that came into our inbox.
This is Ann from Oklahoma. I was calling to tell you about my friend's son, who is Native American. He was playing in a high school basketball game, and students from the opposing team started chanting Pocahontas. These were supporters from the opposing team who were in the stands. I cannot think that these students would have thought to use the term Pocahontas as a racial slur to a male basketball player without having first heard it from the president.
And thanks for calling in with that. We recall, of course, Amy, that the president was referred to Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas because of her Native American ancestry. Not a lot of Native American ancestry, but some. And even made that crude remark during an event at the White House recognizing Native American Navajo code talkers who helped America win World War II.
With a picture of Andrew Jackson in the background.
Right.
We captured that picture.
Who is the president behind the Trail of Tears.
Yes. Yeah, so the number of hate crimes, as recorded by the Southern Poverty Law Center, is as a record. The amount of anti-Semitism in our country, tracked by the ADL, is had a record increase. You can look at any marginalized community or anything that's not white, straight, Christian, and male, and acts of hate against or acting out against are all part of the fabric of our country that has changed under Trump. And that's the kind of stuff I put early in each week's list because it gets very little national coverage, but to me is part of the most alarming.
Peter from Michigan writes, I also disagree that Trump is the next Hitler. He is too lazy, uninformed, unfocused, and disorganized to be more than a dime store Ceausescu at best. I wonder about that idea. I mean, I have a hard time. I appreciate the list, but I have a hard time as an American believing that authoritarianism is over the next rise. I mean, we are not new to having presidents who espouse views that today we would read as racist, sexist, or homophobic. They were just racist, sexist, homophobes who ran representative democracies. I mean, mm-hmm. Is authoritarianism really the risk? Authoritarianism as such? Or is it just the kind of democracy that you as a progressive don't want to live in?
Well, let's talk about how our government's functioning now. What do you think the Republicans' legislative goals are, or Trump's, for the next 6 months? And I'm asking you rhetorically because you don't know, because there aren't any. It is basically a party of one unilaterally deciding on a given week what he's going to do. 2 weeks ago, he had South Korea come visit before they can even explain what they were there to discuss. He said, stop, meet with him, send South Korea out to tell our country that he was going to meet with Kim Jong-un. The next week, it was tariff wars with China and the worst April in our country for the stock market since the Great Depression. So there's no rhyme or reason. This is just, and that's why I keep saying it's not normal. You but might that, not agree with Reagan's policy. You might agree with Barack Obama's policies, but they had a vision of where they were going and a policy agenda. Trump does not.
But that's a far cry from, say, what China's President Xi Jinping has done, where the Communist Party in China has allowed him to become president for life. And I know our time
Trump,
is short.
Yes, it was a great idea.
Which he joked
and
about,
we
yeah.
need to talk about the world order and who he's cozying up with from the beginning of the list where he was speaking out against NATO. And he has cozied up to authoritarians, to Putin, to Turkey's Erdogan, to Egypt's el-Sisi, where, you know, to Saudi Arabia. We have strained relations with Canada, with Mexico, with Germany, with France. So he's changed the world order, which is also a hallmark of authoritarianism. You go up with strong men like yourselves. It almost is like we're splitting up the spheres of the world between China, Russia, and ourselves. I mean, right. That's an apt comparison.
And it's also worth noting that the president, Egypt's president al-Sisi, just won re-election with, I think, 97% of the vote. And President Trump also called to congratulate him. Our time is very short, but I do wonder, Amy, as you continue to compile this list, how you stay sane. I could not imagine focusing this much on everything that I thought was wrong in the world without running screaming naked through Rock Creek Park and having nice men in white coats take me away. Like, there's no way I would survive that. How do you stay level or hopeful as you're compiling this list?
Well, I was a college athlete, so I'm used to, like, you know, staying at something and being very focused. And what's fed me to continue on is I really fear for what's happening in our country. I feel like it's my civic duty. I feel like a lot of people appreciate the work and read the work and understand the value of compiling a list because, journalists included, during the week they get distracted from the shiny coins being thrown. So I'm going to stick with it until he steps down, however that may be, through elections, through impeachment, through whatever else may happen. I'll stick with it.
And do you ever grant yourself a mental break?
Unfortunately, I can't. I've been with it since November 2016. I just said there's too much news every day.
Can I tell you something funny? We do the Friday News Roundup here, and almost every Friday when the journalists come in, I'll mention what we're talking about, and they're like, oh my God, that was this week.
That's what I do every Saturday morning. I say, oh my God, that was this Monday.
Amy Siskind is the author of The List, a week-by-week reckoning of Trump's first year. Amy, appreciate you compiling the list and appreciate you coming on to talk to us. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. This is 1A.